Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we explore a different aspect of the unknown, including news updates and exciting new guests. And tonight, our guest is Richard Salva. He is an author, and he's written a very interesting book, which we're going to talk about tonight. It's called Soul Journey, From Lincoln to Lindbergh. It's actually about past lives. It's very interesting, but before I actually get into that, I want to tell you what's going on in the UFO community. Lots of interesting stuff is happening. Let's see, what do we got going on? There's a very interesting case which occurred. Let me see. This was in Capitola, which I believe is in California. And a gentleman was with his fiancée visiting her parents. And they were there actually to announce the engagement. They were eating dinner on the back porch when they noticed a strange object hovering in the sky. Now, they had a camera, so they quickly grabbed it and were able to actually get several clear shots of this craft as it took off over the roof of the house and hovered over the nearby telephone poles. Another car drove by, stopped, and also saw it. And they developed the pictures, and what's really interesting is there's some weird writing that is visible on some of these craft, in these photographs. So what that is, I don't know, but there are many cases of UFOs with strange symbols on them, so it's not terribly unusual. Another really interesting news story is that about giant crystal caves, which have been found in, Mexico, in Cueva de los Cristales. It's actually called the Cave of Crystals. Geologists announced this week that he and a team of researchers, Stefan Lovgren from the National Geographic News has announced this, that a giant cave filled with crystals has been found in the Mexican desert. It's buried 1,000 feet below the Nayaca Mountains in the Chihuahuan Desert, and the cave was actually discovered by two miners who are excavating a new tunnel. Now, what's really interesting about this cave is it contains some of the largest natural crystals ever found, translucent gypsum beams measuring up to 36 feet long and weighing up to 55 tons are scattered throughout the cave. I actually have a photograph of it right here. It's amazing. These crystals tower over people's heads, so it's really quite an amazing discovery. Anyone who would like to see a picture of that, give me an email, and I will send it off to you. What else do we got going on here? Yes, there's some really interesting stuff going on in terms of UFO secrecy. As you know, recently, if you listen to this show, France has recently released their UFO files, as has England. Now, Jacques Vallée has pointed out that although France has released their UFO files, there still remains a number of secret military files that have not been released. But what's also interesting is early February of 2007, the Chilean army disclosed recordings of moving films of helicopters encountering UFOs. They actually showed this video of the Chilean Navy pursuing a UFO. So this is actually a really good and exciting news, I think, for the UFO community. Also really interesting, another step forward, I think, in ending the UFO cover-up is what's happening in Hawaii. Apparently, the Hawaiian House of Representatives has just drafted a House resolution calling upon the United Nations General Assembly to advance the cause of world peace and cooperation between nations, basically to promote a search for intelligent life and a definite answer to whether or not it has come to Earth or is within our reach. So it's actually a very long resolution, and I don't have time to read it here, but it's really exciting. It just shows that this subject is finally getting the respectability it finally deserves. So lots of sightings still going on. Most of them are just, you know, your typical sightings, not a lot of really unique stuff. So I thought I'd just get right into our guest and our show tonight because it's so unique. We have done shows on past lives before, but I'm telling you, you have not heard a story like this. Our topic is the book Soul Journey, From Lincoln to Lindbergh, written by author Richard Salva. Are past lives real? You know, many people have claimed to have a past life as Joan of Arc or Marie Antoinette. But surprisingly, past life research shows that very few people actually report having been someone famous in their past life. But if past lives are real, and I believe they are, then we have all lived many lifetimes. And our guest tonight is actually a leading researcher into past lives and reincarnation. And he has also extensively studied the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda, whose book, Autobiography of a Yogi, is considered a spiritual classic. Now, Richard Salva is a minister and has researched past lives and reincarnation for more than 30 years. He has lectured widely on yoga, philosophy, reincarnation, and history across the United States and Europe. His book, Soul Journey, From Lincoln to Lindbergh, has received 5 stars from Forward Clarion Reviews and the Midwest Book Review, and has earned high praise from numerous other reviewers. Now, what is this book about? Well, I'm just going to let our guest tell you. So, Richard, thank you for coming onto the show.
Thank you, Preston. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, this is really an amazing story. I mean, I was reading over your book, and it's just stunning. I'm really, really, really amazed by it. So, this all began from one sentence you read out of Autobiography of a Yogi. Is that correct?
Yes, actually, the sentence was written and published in a book by Yogananda's disciple named Kriyananda. He wrote his autobiography, which is called The Path.
Oh, okay.
And in that book, he mentioned that Paramahansa Yogananda, this great master of yoga and world teacher, had said that Abraham Lincoln in a past life had been an advanced Himalayan yogi and that he was reborn as Charles Lindbergh. And about 10 years ago, I was on an airplane heading to the East Coast, and I was in between writing projects. And I'm a minister and a yogi and a spiritual person. So I thought I would pray for guidance. And within less than a minute's time, the idea for this book came to me, and it was a very strong sense of a very specific thought. It wasn't a vague notion by any means. And as I was sitting there, this thought came, remember what Yogananda had said, he's my spiritual teacher, what Paramahansa Yogananda had said about Lincoln and Lindbergh. And I realized at that moment that I was pretty much up on what Himalayan yogis practice and believe in their teachings, having studied and practiced them myself for over 20 years at that point, now over 30 years. And that these two men, Lincoln and Lindbergh, are two of the most famous people in history, that their lives have been deeply chronicled, that there are many, many biographies about them and also writings of the men themselves. And I thought it should be possible, if there is any evidence that what Yogananda had said is true, to find that evidence just by going through the history texts and in the books. So I started doing that, and I'll tell you, this project just took over my life. For quite a period of time, I just ate, dreamt, slept, meditated on Lincoln, Lindbergh, and in past life Himalayan yogi, and I was just amazed by what I found. You know, when I started, I wasn't sure how much I would find. I thought I might find a few interesting connections. But I discovered nearly 500 fascinating parallels and connections.
500?
Yes, nearly 500 between Lincoln and Lindbergh. More than 200 between Abraham Lincoln and the ancient spiritual science of yoga. More than 100 between Charles Lindbergh and the path of yoga. And so there was just so much there. And in fact, that's what I put in my book, that there's more that I couldn't put in my book because I just didn't want my book to be too big. So I tried to put the best of what I found in my book. But that's just to say that there was a tremendous amount of corroborative, factual detail out there. And it was just incredible to be on the receiving end of this flood of information.
Yeah, I mean, what an opportunity. I mean, the fact that, like you said, their lives are so recorded and chronicled.
Yes, this gives us an opportunity because, you know, these subtle laws of karma and reincarnation and past lives, if they apply to one person, they apply to everyone. And if they are in effect in the lives of Lincoln and Lindbergh, then they are also in effect in our lives. And so what I discovered, again, while working on this book, was not only the connections between Lincoln and Lindbergh in a past life Himalayan yogi, but I also discovered and gained a deeper understanding and appreciation for how these subtle laws work in my own life. And others who have read my book, Soul Journey from Lincoln to Lindbergh, have told me that they've had a similar experience while reading the book, that after reading these stories, and I put it all in story form, or almost all of it, so it's a very light and easy read. I tell a story or an anecdote from, say, the life of Charles Lindbergh, and then I have another little story and anecdote from the life of Lincoln, and it shows the connection between the two. And that through reading these, you read one, they say, oh, that's interesting. Then you read another, and you say, oh, that's fascinating. But what you get is you get a sense for how we, in our own lives, see and feel and discover our connections to our own past lives. Those moments when we have a sense of deja vu, for instance, and we have a sense of, oh, I've experienced this before, what's that all about? Or we meet somebody for the first time and you just feel like you've known them forever. You know, moments like that, if you could do a storyboard, each person could do a storyboard or a journal and keep track of those things, they would start to really understand, we could start to really understand where we came from and get a clearer sense for where we're going.
Right, yeah, I think people kind of underestimate how powerful an influence our past lives have on our present life.
Yes, and it's surprising, too, because we put so much time and energy, many of us, to delve into our childhood, for instance, to try to understand what happened when I was a kid, and because we know that what happened then helped to form and shape what we are now. But how much more would not only just one childhood, which is just a short period of time through a number of years, but many, many childhoods, many, many whole lifetimes, have affected us in the past. And it's true that not every single lifetime that we've lived in the past is being put into effect, that there's some sort of connection with this lifetime. Often it's lifetimes that are fairly recent, but occasionally there are things that come from the distant past. However, to have some sort of sense of how those influences are affecting us are really vital for self-understanding and for self-growth.
Oh, I agree. I think a lot of people's phobias and their interests and, you know, all these things are probably bleed-throughs from previous lives, even illnesses.
Yes.
Often.
Yes, and I think a lot of those things, too, are things that will show up in childhood. You know, why does one child, when he's first taken out swimming, just go screaming?
Okay, sorry about that, folks. We had a little glitch there. But I'm back with my guest, Richard Salva, author of Soul Journey from Lincoln to Lindbergh. You're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. So where were we, Richard?
Well, you know, I was just thinking that interruption reminded me of reincarnation because here we were in the middle of something and then suddenly we were interrupted. And that's what happens. You might be in the middle of some sort of project in your life, some sort of growth cycle. You're about to make a certain step forward, and then your life gets interrupted. You get run over while crossing the street, or you know who knows what happens, and then you have to just sort of wait for the call to come in, and
right.
You're in a new body, and you have to wait for all the stuff like learning how to walk, and you know going to school, and you know all that stuff. But eventually, you'll find the time and opportunity to take up where you left off, and here we are again, just like we do in reincarnation.
So we're all born to a certain extent with missions, or
Many of us have some sort of a strong mission in life. We see that in the life of Abraham Lincoln. And it was very pronounced. In fact, when he was a child, he actually had dreams or visions, I'm not sure exactly which, in which he saw his whole life sort of played out in front of him for him to know. And it was quite an intense thing for a young boy to see because he saw that he would rise to a place of power in the land and that after he had achieved that pinnacle, that he would fall from that in a bloody ending. And so this is a rather intense thing for a young boy to mull over, and I think it added to his melancholy in life. But, you know, it's interesting because there's a connection there to the path of yoga. And now when I'm talking about connections to the path of yoga, I'm not talking about the yoga postures and exercises so much as the deeper teachings, the spiritual and moral and ethical teachings that underlie the exercises and postures. And one of those teachings has to do with the spiritual quality of introspection. There are 10 mores or spiritual recommendations or guidelines that Patanjali, who's the first great master of yoga, to actually write these things out. And one of those is introspection. He said that if you master this quality of self-study, that you will receive information and guidance from higher spheres. And so for most of us, since we're here in the West, in the East, they tend to have visions more easily. But here in the West, we're so really focused on the conscious mind as opposed, say, to the subconscious or the superconscious.
Right.
That it's harder for us to have these sort of things during the waking day. And so at night it's easier because the conscious mind is shut off and the subconscious and superconscious are able to come into play. So Lincoln actually had a number of these sort of dream visions and spoken about them. And one of his friends wrote about them after he had passed away.
Is that right? I knew he had had psychic events as an adult, and he dreamed about his own death, I believe. Is that right?
Yes. One time he was asleep while he was president, and he found himself roaming through the halls of the White House. And he said he heard the sound of weeping, but there was nobody there. And then he made himself to the large East Room, and he found everything laid out for a funeral, and there was a crowd there in the East Room. And he turned to somebody next to him, and he said, who has died? And the man said, the president. He was killed by an assassin. And then this great sound of wailing and weeping came to him, and it woke him up. And this happened just a very short time, I believe, before he was killed by John Wilkes Booth.
Right. So he grew up in a log cabin. He was poor, right?
Lincoln. Yes.
And now, how does this relate to Lindbergh in his childhood?
It's more of a fact that what happens is that all these movements from past lives are directional. And so we look more, we can see perhaps some connections with the childhood of Lincoln and the childhood of Lindbergh, but you actually see more from the adulthood of Abraham Lincoln and the childhood of Lindbergh, because everything is moving forward in time.
Oh, well, that makes perfect sense, actually.
Yes, and it's rather fascinating that, for instance, Charles Lindbergh, when he was a young boy, now this is around 1910 or so, when young boys are taught to worship the President of the United States practically. I mean, when I was a kid, we put the President up on a pedestal. It was before Watergate and everything else, you know, and
right.
I guess you call it Iraqgate now, or whatever we want to call it. But back then, you know, we just thought the president was, you know, the Gap's pajamas, and back another 50 years before then, it would have been even much more so. And Charles Lindbergh met the president at that time, I believe it was Woodrow Wilson, and when he shook his hand, he was just very kind of cool to him, and his mother said, well, weren't you excited meeting the president? And little Lindbergh said, no, the president is just a man like anybody else.
Hmm.
Which is something that you might expect from somebody who had been a president.
Right.
You know, we tend to think, oh, these people are in these positions that are so glamorous and so great, but then you get into those positions and you see, gee, it's just like a prison. In fact, Abraham Lincoln could very well have felt that way because he lost his son there when he was president in Washington, D.C. He saw his friends going off to war, then getting killed. It was a very difficult time, and he had to fight his own battles during the Civil War, just trying to keep it all together, hold the country together for those 4 years. And it's really more like a gilded prison. Many presidents have felt that. And it's interesting that when Charles Lindbergh was a young boy, he went to Washington, D.C. on a regular basis. He, at some time, he would split, his family split the year almost down the middle, where some part of the year they were in Washington, D.C. because his dad was a congressman, Republican congressman, which Lincoln had been also. And then they went back to the prairies of Minnesota. And Lindbergh just felt like he was, he wrote it out in one of his diaries that when he was a kid in D.C., he just felt like he was in prison. He just hated being there and wanted to go back to Minnesota, to the Midwest. And the funny thing is that at the, toward the end of Lincoln's life, in fact, on the very last day of Lincoln's life, Lincoln was talking about how much he missed being in the Midwest, being in the prairies of Illinois and everything there and his home there, and he really wanted to get back there. And here is the same feeling reincarnated in Charles Lindbergh as a young boy.
All right. Wow. Very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as, I mean, he also had a past life as a Himalayan yogi. Is there any idea when that life took place?
Well, it would have had to have been at least in the 18th century or before, because Lincoln was born in 1809. So usually there's some period, some gap in between incarnations. Often, sometimes it can be fairly quick in between incarnations, but usually there's some sort of a gap. And so I would imagine that at the latest, he, this Himalayan yogi, had died in the latter 1700s. Yes.
So first it was Lincoln, then the yogi, then the Lindbergh, then Lindbergh.
The yogi, then Lincoln, then Lindbergh. And you see, you can see this yogic influence in Abraham Lincoln in a number of ways. For instance, there's another teaching in yoga. It's called pranayama, which means energy control. And there are stories of advanced yogis in the Himalayas who can just do amazing things like lift heavy boulders and carry them. The funny thing about Lincoln is when he was a young man, he did pretty much the same thing. there's stories of him lifting a 600-pound chicken coop and carrying it, lifting a 1,000-pound box of rocks with just a few ropes, lifting a heavy barrel of whiskey and taking a sip from it and then spitting it out because he didn't drink, which is something that advanced yogis wouldn't do either, and that Charles Lindbergh was well known not for doing. So on. But there's one trick that he did that he liked to do, even when he did it when he was a young man and also when he was president in Washington. He would take an axe, and now in the 1800s, you know, the metallurgy wasn't as advanced as it is now.
Right.
So the axe head was much heavier than the ones they have nowadays. And he would take it by the very end of the handle, and he'd have it down at his side, and he would slowly lift it up until there was a straight line between the shoulder and the end of the axe head. Now, if you've never done this with a really heavy axe, you have no idea how hard that could be to do. Lincoln could do it because he had tremendous control of the energy in his body, just like the Himalayan yogis. You know, he was really tall and thin. He didn't look that strong, but again, he had amazing energy control of his body. Others who were his friends who saw him do this were much more burly than him. They looked more like weightlifter types. More like Schwarzenegger types, you know.
Right.
And they couldn't do it, but he could.
Wow. That is astonishing.
Yeah. But these are just a few of the many, many connections that I found that are in my book.
So at what point did you decide that the guy who wrote this sentence, I forget his name.
Yogananda, who said this, yes.
When did you decide that he was right, that Lincoln and Lindbergh, I mean, how many connections did it take to convince you?
Well, the more I found, the more convincing it was to me. And I often say that with everything in the book, as I said, I didn't put everything in the book because I just couldn't, but that it's even more, I'm even more convinced of it than someone reading my book. However, there, at one point, I really felt like I wanted to feel and experience that this was true. It wasn't enough for me to just have all these connections that I was finding that were just fascinating and that really, you know, lended credence to what Yogananda had said. But I wanted to feel, like, as I said, I really wanted to feel the truth of it. And so I made a decision to make a trip. It was sort of a pilgrimage of sorts. And I need to preface this by saying that as someone who meditates for hours, several hours every day, and has done so for now for over 30 years, I've become a what I call a connoisseur of spiritual energies. I've often gone on pilgrimage to places like, say, Assisi or Glastonbury or other places that have a strong spiritual energy to them,
right.
And enjoyed meditating there and feeling the inspiration there. But each of these places that I've gone to, I've felt had a very distinct spiritual energy. For instance, even in Assisi, if I would go to a place where it was sacred to St. Francis, it would be different from a place that was sacred to St. Clair. They would both be inspiring, but in slightly different ways.
Huh.
Just as each personality would just channel light in a slightly different way, there would be a slightly different coloring to that light. They would all be light, but it would be a slightly different color. And so I flew to the Midwest and went to the land of Lincoln, to Illinois, and went to Springfield, which is Abraham Lincoln's hometown, and went to his home and to where he had worked and to his tomb. I also went to a place down the road called New Salem, which was where Abraham Lincoln as a young man first sort of got his legs underneath him. He left his family home and started out there and just meditated there in the places that were, historically real, very much a part of Lincoln's legacy. And I just had a very powerful experience of a real high soul. It was comparable to what I had experienced in places like Assisi and Glastonbury and so on. But it was very specific. And there was a certain sadness there. And Lincoln suffered from melancholy during his life. He was known for this.
Right.
But it didn't diminish the light that I felt was coming through him. To me, it was the way I describe it is as if you put a certain spice in a stew to bring out the flavor, and that's what this sadness was. It just sort of it made it very real and personal, and it was a very special lifetime, that of Abraham Lincoln. So after experiencing and enjoying this for a day or two, I went overnight to Minnesota and drove up to Little Falls, where Charles Lindbergh lived as a young boy. And so this is the next day. And when I stepped onto the property where Lindbergh had lived when he was just a young boy, my knees almost buckled because I felt the same energy I had felt the day before.
Oh,
it was exactly the same, except the sadness was not there anymore. And the only way that I can explain that is that the many selfless things that Abraham Lincoln had done in his life had freed him from that karma that he had carried in the life of Lincoln, so that he was free. And if you look at, if you study the life of Lindbergh like I did, you see that with everything that he went through in his life, or the loss of his son when he was kidnapped and everything else, that he had an inner freedom. Nothing bothered him for too long. I'm certainly grieved for his son, but it was as if he was able to rise above the trials of life in his own inner spirit. And I think this was a blessing and part of the legacy that he carried over from his lifetime as Lincoln.
All right. So this is why you write in the book, like, Lindbergh was Lincoln on vacation?
Yes. That's another part of it. And when we look at, we just spoke a little while ago about Abraham Lincoln having this life mission that he knew even as a young boy. When you have something like that, there's not a lot of leeway to just sort of do what you like to. You can take little small vacations and stuff, but you can't really just sort of have fun. But when you look at the life of Charles Lindbergh, you see that from a very early age, he was free to do the things that Lincoln would have wanted to do but couldn't. For instance, Abraham Lincoln loved to travel. He rode something called the circuit court, which is where he would travel through the counties adjacent to the county in which Springfield was in to try law cases and to just help people, basically. And he did that run, and then when the other lawyers and judges and so on left, he continued to do it even after they had stopped because he just liked to travel. Now, the interesting thing about Himalayan yogis is that many of them take on this lifestyle, which is known as the wandering sadhu lifestyle, in which they travel for large parts of the year. And part of that is rooted in the thought that this whole world is my home. I'm not limited to any one place. and that they just have this sense of freedom that they can just roam the world as if all the world was theirs, and the whole world is their family.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a beautiful consciousness, and you see it in the life of Lincoln. But again, he had many limitations in his life and couldn't travel as much as he would have liked. And then you see the life of Charles Lindbergh, who at a very early age, I mean, the world was his oyster. He could do what he wished. And he chose a lifestyle that pretty much stipulated, he chose a career that pretty much stipulated constant travel. He set out and found new air routes around the world to help to design most of the air routes that you and I travel on when we fly in airplanes. Quite a number of them were originally flown and plotted by Lindbergh and sometimes also by his wife, Ann Morrow.
Right. Well, it's hard to imagine a freer lifestyle than, you know, being a pilot.
Yes.
And having, I mean, that's amazingly free.
Yes, he just traveled the world through most of his life. If anybody was born with wanderlust, you would say that he had it. And if anybody got to satisfy that wanderlust, you must have to say that he was the Marco Polo of his day.
Right. Well, both of them were true pioneers, right? I mean, Lincoln with the trying to end this slavery in our country.
Yes.
And Lindbergh, you know, pioneering aviation.
Yes. And, you know, Lindbergh's career was actually a combination of two of Lincoln's hobbies. One of them was transportation. During the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln signed the bill to carry on the, to begin the Transcontinental Railroad. And again, this was during the Civil War when who knew from one week to the next whether the country was going to continue.
Right.
He had this forward-looking vision. When he was younger and he was an attorney, he used to try cases for the steamship companies when they were the cutting edge of transportation. And then when the railroads came in, he changed his tune and he started to actually argue railroad interests against steamship interests when they were the cutting edge of transportation. And you see Lindbergh helping to open up transportation around the world with his flight to Europe. That was the first scheduled and actually,
right,
you know, first transatlantic flight in which that was scheduled and actually went according to plan from New York to Paris and started all the flights that we have now. But the other side of it that's interesting is the thing related to that in Lindbergh's career was mechanics. And Abraham Lincoln, most people don't know this, was actually a natural mechanic. There are stories of him in the courtroom just taking the jury and showing them the threshing machine and how it worked, and also of him taking his young son on a ride on the train and his son asking him, well, how does this train work? And then him just giving a very good and specific answer for exactly how the pistons move the wheel. You know, I mean, just much more in-depth than that, so something that a natural engineer would be able to say.
Wow. This is so fascinating. I mean, we learned about both Lindbergh and Lincoln in school and in the history books, but they never teach us about these connections or
yes.
past lives, of course.
Well, I don't think anybody thought to look at them until Yogananda would say that, but he was a great master of yoga. He was a world teacher. So, you know, if he says something like that, then it sort of, at least for me especially, because I follow his teachings, but it makes us sort of open our eyes and sit up straight and sort of say, okay, well, maybe there's something to this. It's definitely worth checking out. And I checked it out, and wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty major assertion. So did you find any evidence that either Lindbergh or Lincoln believed in past lives?
You know, there was one thing that Lindbergh said that was really quite interesting. You know, the anniversary, the 80th anniversary of his flight to Paris was Sunday, this last Sunday on the 20th.
Oh.
And many people, again, we all know that he made this flight from New York to Paris and the first solo transatlantic flight, but most of us don't know about the fantastic spiritual and metaphysical experiences that Charles Lindbergh had during this flight. In fact, before he made this flight, he was hardly able to sleep the night before. Then this flight was 33 and a half hours, so that's a long time to be awake.
Right.
And so Lindbergh, after taking off in the early morning on May the 20th, found himself with nightfall coming, and he was really very sleepy because he hadn't slept the night before. And so this battle started to wage between his conscious mind and his subconscious. His subconscious is saying, oh, you've got to sleep. You can't stay up like this. It's just impossible. It's just humanly impossible. And his conscious mind would argue, no, if I fall asleep, then I'll plunge into the ocean and drown, and no one will hear from me again. And so these two parts of his mind were warring, and then he said that a third part of his mind started to speak. And so what happened was the tension of his conscious and subconscious mind catapulted him into a superconscious state. Yogananda said that the superconsciousness can be found at the horizon line of the conscious and the subconscious. And so, like I said, this tension helped to push him into that superconsciousness. And this part of his mind said, don't worry, you're going to rest, but you're not going to fall asleep. And he just surrendered to this part of his mind, and suddenly he had this very powerful spiritual experience. He found that he was, for one thing, his body went on autopilot. He was flying the airplane, but not by conscious control. And while that was happening, he was able to suddenly see all around the cockpit at once. He could see out the back of his head. It was something that the yogis call spherical vision, which sometimes occurs during deep meditation. And so while he was experiencing that, he saw that the cockpit of the airplane had also expanded, and he was actually seeing the astral blueprint of that cockpit in the astral or energy world.
Wow.
And while he was experiencing this, these beings appeared in the back of his cockpit and came forward one at a time to connect with Lindbergh, and they spoke to him mind to mind and spirit to spirit. And he said afterward he could never recall exactly what they had said, but it was very powerful stuff, something that he just felt like it was feeding him, just his connection with them. And he said, now you had asked if they'd ever said anything about reincarnation. In his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Spirit of St. Louis, Charles Lindbergh said, they felt so familiar to me that I wondered if I had known them in past lives. And now the interesting thing about that, again, is this was a very yogic experience, a metaphysical experience. All the things that he experienced were things that advanced yogis have also experienced. And who knows if these souls that visited him weren't the spirits of great other advanced yogis that he knew in the Himalayas, who had come at this very crucial moment of his life when he's making this very important flight that would actually determine his whole future. To be there to support him and to be there for him. But anyway, they stayed with him for a while, and then they disappeared, and then he had one other deep and powerful experience, which was that his spirit left his physical body and astral projected out through the cone of his airplane, he said, and mixed with the wash of his propeller, and then it was flying next to the spirit of St. Louis over the Atlantic. So what you've got there is Lucky Lindy flying two planes at once, the Spirit of St. Louis and the astral plane.
Wow.
And so that's the metaphysical side. And, oh, there's one other thing that's really quite fascinating. As I said, he was flying this airplane beyond his conscious control. You can imagine how much it takes to just drive your car. You can imagine what it would be to have to fly this airplane built in the 1920s, it was just top-heavy with gasoline. All that you had to do with all the instruments and so on to just keep it in the air, or to speak of keeping it on course. Also, his compass didn't work during all of his flight. When he hit landfall in Ireland, he found that he was pretty much almost exactly on course, within a mile of being off course, which is just astronomical. The odds against it are just astronomical.
Right. Now, this is an amazing story. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Richard Salva. He's written this very fascinating book called Soul Journey from Lincoln to Lindbergh. Now, Richard, do you have a website, or where can people order this book or learn more about it?
Yes, I actually have a special offer for this book on my site for Soul Journey from Lincoln to Lindbergh. And the easiest way to get to that site is to access LincolnReincarnation.com.
Okay, that's easy to remember. LincolnReincarnation.com. One word.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Now, in reincarnation, when someone reincarnates in the past life often, this is what I've heard, they reincarnate in the same family group, or so to speak, that they'll reincarnate with the same people?
Well, sometimes what happens is you'll reincarnate usually around people that you know. There may be some in your family that are a little bit distant that you haven't connected with. Hello?
Yeah.
Yes, you're still there. Okay.
Yeah.
I heard a click. There might be some souls that you're only somewhat familiar with and others that you are super familiar with. And some of the relationships may have shifted as well. By and large, these people that you are in the family that you're born to are people that you know. But there's a larger family. It's not just, we're not just talking here about physical families, but more of spiritual families. People that you just have this natural attunement with, a natural affinity with. And these are the people, like I said, where suddenly you see somebody in your fifth grade chemistry class, or whatever, not fifth grade chemistry, but fifth grade class, and you look forward and you look at them and you just smile and you have an instant connection. You know, people that, the person that you end up marrying is somebody. Yogananda said that we can't be really close to somebody in this life unless we are at least somewhat close to them in a past life. Huh. All the relationships that we have are ones that we've developed in the past and that we are continuing to develop now. And the whole idea behind it is to learn how to behave with each other and how to treat each other well, how to love unconditionally.
Right.
But that's a lesson that takes a long, long time to learn. But these are the ways that we practice.
Well, like someone like Mary Todd Lincoln, would she be possibly reincarnating in Lindbergh's group?
Well, one might expect that. And in fact, I wondered, for instance, if Ann Morrow Lindbergh had been Mary Todd Lincoln in the past life. Interesting, they both went by three names there. Not that many women during those times did. In fact, it's interesting that both Lincoln and Lindbergh married women who were from prominent families. There are other connections like that. But again, going back to this point of Mary Todd having possibly been Ann Morrow, I started to study this when a friend of mine who was also interested in these things and had also done a little bit of a study on his own mentioned to me that it seemed to him that Ann Morrow was not a personality match for Mary Todd. And when I studied that, that made sense. And he also said, this friend, that it seemed to him that perhaps Ann Morrow could have been Ann Rutledge in a past life. Now, if you study the life of Abraham Lincoln, during that time when he was in New Salem, the legend of Abraham Lincoln states that he met this young woman named Ann Rutledge and stayed in her father's tavern. And while they were there, he fell in love with her and was actually engaged to marry her, but then that she died before they were able to consummate that relationship. And that this, again, according to this legend of Lincoln, was what had started his tendency to be melancholy in that lifetime.
Right.
And so here you see the very real possibility of romance reincarnating, the one that got away, the one, we always sometimes wonder about this, if only things had worked out with so-and-so, but then they had to leave and go to another country or another part of this country or what have you, and then I met so-and-so or whatever. Don't worry about it. These things work out in long spans of time. There are always these opportunities. The fascinating thing is that when you look at the personalities of Ann Rutledge and Ann Morrow, they are pretty much a perfect match, at least for what we know of Ann Rutledge. We don't have a lot of information about her, but everything we do have matches up very well with Ann Morrow. For instance, Ann Morrow wrote in her book Gift from the Sea this beautifully and longingly of the lifestyle of the century before, where you made candles from tallow, and the sort of things that Ann Rutledge would have done, because she had lived in those times in the frontier of the Midwest. And also that Ann Rutledge was very, she had really quite pronounced manual dexterity. She was really known for her knitting and sewing and so on, that she hands could just fly over the patterns, and that she was just really quite gifted that way. And there's a story in the book, Under a Wing, by Charles and Anne Marl Lindbergh's daughter, Reeve, in which she describes standing with her mother in an airport, and her mother had taken an airline ticket and was bending and folding it into these intense, really fascinating geometric shapes without even thinking about it with one hand. And when Aunt Reeve brought it to her attention, she was embarrassed and she just threw it into a garbage can. Huh. And she just created this little origamic masterpiece without even thinking about it, you know, something that Ann Rutledge could have very well have done also.
Wow. Very.
But there are just many, many connections this way between Ann Rutledge and Anne Morrow, between the romance, Lincoln's How He Got Married and How Lindbergh Got Married, and so on. It just goes on and on through all the parts of their lives. Just these connections just weaving throughout both of their lives.
Right. That's what I was going to say. And with 500 connections, it must have pretty much permeated every aspect.
Yes, yes. In fact, they cover every aspect of human life, from the physical to the mental, emotional, social, and spiritual as well.
Wow. Well, one of probably Lindbergh's most profound moments in his life was dealing with the kidnapping of his child.
Yes.
How does that figure into what you found out about Lincoln?
Well, it's fascinating that both men lost his son while centered in the public eye, for one thing. Abraham Lincoln, when he was president, I think I mentioned this before, his favorite son Willie died of typhoid. And that was a very painful thing for him. Again, he was president of the United States. All the eyes were upon him. And then to have his son die right in the middle of just trying to deal with everything that was going on with the Civil War was just very, very hard for Lincoln. So, and then we know also for Charles Lindbergh, after he had flown the Atlantic, again, all eyes were on him. He was as famous or more famous than any president. And everybody was just, you know, he was the first mega superstar. You know, he was the first one to have to deal with these guys just following him and taking photographs in his face, and or one of the first. And I think he was as big as anybody could ever be, especially during that time period when he was alive.
Mm-hmm.
But in the middle of that, to have his son kidnapped and killed during the kidnapping attempt was very, very hard for him as well. But for these, you see again this progression of how we kind of learn and grow from one lifetime to the next. And let me explain this. Lincoln's experience of the loss of his son, again, this is his favorite son. So even after Willie had been dead for like 1 or 2 weeks, he still asked them to disinter his body so that he can look at his remains. And again, this is before they had the embalming technique really, you know, going for people on a widespread basis. And he just wanted to see his face one more time. And Charles Lindbergh, after they found his son's body, which had been laying out in nature for quite a while, for weeks, he insisted on seeing him, even though others had already identified him. He just said, "I wanted to see him." And so both men viewed their son's remains after they'd been dead for several weeks. Now, Abraham Lincoln, again, this, as I mentioned, was very painful for him. He used to go into seclusion right after his son's death for a number of weeks every Thursday. Now, this is interesting also because Thursday is a very special day for introspection and spiritual growth for Himalayan yogis, who call it Guru Day. So it's interesting that he chose that particular day to do that. But he was grieving quite a while, and then he had an experience where he had a talk with a Christian minister, a Christian pastor. And this man was a man of God, and he told Lincoln that his son was alive. And Lincoln just sort of like looked at him like in shock and said, "Alive? What do you mean he's alive?" And then the minister explained that to everyone, I mean to God, everyone is alive. And suddenly it was like a light went on in him, and he realized something that perhaps he had known before, that death is just a step, it's just stepping from one room into another. And suddenly he embraced the minister, and he was in tears, and he just had the sense of hope and of realization that he would see Willie again, that this was not an ending, but just a temporary separation. And so even though he still missed Willie after that, he no longer grieved him as hard as he'd done before. Now, the interesting thing about Lindbergh was that after they knew, after the Lindberghs found out that their son had died and had been killed during a kidnapping attempt, it was a very painful thing for both of them. But Charles was able to bounce back fairly soon. He was able to experience the joy of life again fairly soon after. Whereas his wife, if you read the writings again of their daughter, Reeve, or some other evidence, it becomes clear that she on at least one level never recovered from that. And so you see here how Lincoln's experience of going through that grieving process and then realizing the truth of that the soul is immortal and that we do meet each other again, both in the astral world and other experiences here on Earth, helped him to be able, when his next lifetime, to be able to process those feelings of grief more quickly.
Wow. Well, Lincoln, he apparently had a lot of paranormal experiences throughout his life. Is that true also for Lindbergh?
You know, Lindbergh did have this paranormal side to him. He lived for a while on an island off the coast of Brittany, and he said he loved that place especially, and also the little island next to it, because he said it was a place where the physical world and the spiritual world met. And he used to just love to roam that island and then just sit there and silently and just absorb the feelings that he felt there. Again, something that a Himalayan yogi would understand very well.
Right.
And when he traveled the world, whenever he found some place like that, for instance, he felt a similar energy in Mont Saint-Michel when he was in Greece. Was it Greece or Italy? I think it might have been actually in Italy, southern Italy. He went to an old temple, a Greek temple, and he felt an energy there. He had this ability to sense these subtle energies. And Abraham Lincoln also had this appreciation for subtle energies too. When one of his sons was ill, he took him on a trip to Indiana, where there was this stone that was supposed to be a healing stone, and Lincoln had faith in the energies that could come through physical matter like that, and took his son there to be cured.
Wow. Now, I have to ask you this, Richard.
Yes.
While you were writing this book, did you ever have any like personal experiences feeling a connection to Lindbergh or Lincoln yourself, or you know, from their spirit, or any weird coincidences like that?
You know, I felt a connection. I'll tell you something. I went to a psychic at one point when I was just started working on this book, and I wanted to get some feedback and perhaps some ideas for where it might go. And so when I was waiting to speak with a psychic, it turned out that she was running late with the readings that she was doing. And so she came up to me and wanted to tell me that, and we'd never met before. She looked at me, and then she looked over my shoulder and smiled. And then she went away, and I waited, and then she was free, and I came in to have the reading. And during the reading, I was talking about other things, and she was giving me feedback and ideas, and she was nodding her head. And then when I mentioned I started working on this book on Abraham Lincoln, she just started nodding her head really big and smiling. She said, "When I saw you out there, I actually saw Abraham Lincoln in your aura."
Ah.
Which, you know, is great news for me. You know,
uh-huh.
You know, it's nice to hear something like that, but, you know, I did feel that. There were times when I felt a connection with that soul to the extent of what a beautiful soul he was. I felt the connection with him when I traveled to the Midwest, and also while just working on it, there was a really quite a feeling of harmony and beauty, and I felt like I was revealing a part of Abraham Lincoln that his spirit wanted others to know about, that most people don't write about. Most of the biographies you read, many of them are wonderful and beautiful, and they tell of what a political master he was, and how he was just a great man in so many different ways.
Well, there must be like 100 books written on him, huh?
Yes, at least, and maybe several hundred. I believe he's the second or third most written about person in history.
Oh, really?
Yes, and with good reason. I mean, he was one of those mythical sort of lifetimes almost.
Wow.
And Lindbergh, too, you know, just this beautiful spirit. And so So, yes, I did feel a connection with them, yes.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. It seems to me that they would be aware of something like that.
Yes.
Now, did Lincoln died by a murder or assassination. How did Lindbergh pass away?
I think it was a form of cancer. He died in 1974, and he was in Hawaii. He is buried there on the island of Maui.
That's right. I visited his grave, actually.
Yes, next to a church that was built around the time of the Civil War that he really liked and wanted to kind of renovate, and he insisted that he was buried there. He also wanted to be buried in the solid rock there, and it was a very yogic funeral. I mean, I think they put him in the, this is very simple clothing. Something, again, there's many things about his burial and his funeral that Himalayan yogis could appreciate. He had readings from many scriptures of the world, and yogis believe that the essence of all religions are one, are the same. And so again, he really showed signs of having been a yogi in a past life.
Wow, this is just a really fascinating story. I mean, I've had a lot of interesting guests on the show, but I have to tell you, you're one of the more interesting. It's just a fascinating story. So
yeah.
The book is called Soul Journey from Lincoln to Lindbergh, and people can get it on your website, which is called?
LincolnReincarnation.com. There's a special offer there if you want to check it out.
Okay, LincolnReincarnation.com. Okay, well, we have just about 1 minute. Is there anything you want to leave our listeners with?
Yes, I do. If you're interested in exploring your own past lives, the best way to do so is to learn to meditate. In meditation, you realize that you are the spirit untouched by the cycles of birth and death. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, never the spirit was born, the spirit shall cease to be, never. Never was time it was not, end and beginning are dreams. Birthless and deathless and changeless remaineth the spirit forever. Death has not touched it at all, dead though the house of it seems.
Wow, very profound. All right, Richard, well, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you, Preston. I really appreciate your invitation.
Thank you very much. All right, well, everyone, our guest tonight has been Richard Selva. We've been talking about his amazing book, Soul Journey, from Lincoln to Lindbergh, which you can order through www.lincolnreincarnation.com. I want to thank you all for listening, and I hope you can join us next week when we have on Richard Sennett, a very famous ghost researcher based here in Southern California. Thank you all, and have a wonderful evening.